Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you tonight, sir?
Doing well, doing good, doing great. Happy to be here. Shout out to all you dunkers out there. Thank you for embracing your bounce once again. At one point, folks, one point in time, this is a star on the rise, and folks, now he's just a shining star. The greatest mind in the game.
Oh, okay.
One of the smartest folks breaking this basketball thing down. I am just happy to be in the aura, the shine, the light of the great Nikias Duncan, a.k.a. Nikaiso Duncan. The hashtag is big time, folks.
Are you proud of that one? Did you feel good about that? That was a lot of gas.
Inflation, man. Hey, congratulations, man. You want to tell the folks?
Oh, man. I mean, sure, I suppose. A brief announcement. My tweets with an asterisk are not going to be featured in NBA 2K23. Signed a contract earlier today to have that happen. So very cool to be virtually present in a way in a video game and a video game series that I've been playing for a long time. So stoked about that. Very excited. Kind of random, but I will take it.
The brand is strong, folks. The brand is strong. Go ahead and pre-order NBA 2K23 if you want to see Nikias tweet some more stuff, asterisk-wise. And no one noticed during your well-deserved parade, you said 2K23 and a few more, but I'll let that slide.
Look, man. No,
it's fine. Don't worry, man. You're doing it's great. I just want to know, how's it going to feel, Nikias, to be able to play the game that you love and see yourself on both of your PS5s?
That's a good shot. Annoying shot, but that's a good shot. But no, in all seriousness, it is going to be kind of surreal. Like, as someone that, one, plays a lot of 2K, two, plays a lot of my career, and three, I am a big franchise. Well, I guess they don't call it franchise mode anymore, but you get my point. Big on those. Like, being able to pull up my virtual cell phone on either of those modes and see Nikias NBA is just going to be a surreal experience for me. So once the next game drops, like, I'm sure I'm going to head right to one of those modes and see how long it takes for me to find, I guess, myself commenting. This is just going to be, I don't know. It's weird. It's also humbling. It's not anything that younger me would have expected to happen. And so I am grateful. Just ready to see what it's going to look like. I'm going to petition, see if I can get...
I honestly love that you signed the contract while not even knowing what the game mode is. That's just phenomenal stuff. But I mean, can't wait to see LMBO in video game form. Really hope we could see like a We Saw You. I'm going to make it happen. I'll just hack it, make it work. hopefully they can code in some slander for you for some veterans.
Okay.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Funny part is, actually, we'll do a slight Steve story real quick. Just to take some heat off of you. I've burned you enough in this intro.
Yes.
So when I was with the Grizzlies, they actually did like the face scanning when we played Orlando. But I didn't know like you could just walk in the room and get your face scanned. So like they were like, I would go back and play the game and they were like other non-coach or player people just as referees and stuff. And I was upset.
Oh no.
That's fine. It's all right. Hey, I'm just here waiting to get thrown through the barbershop window, man. Let's do this. Come.
I am not doing this with you. Okay. Before we dig into the theme of the show, let's do some housekeeping with some news. Some not so fun stuff first. Kevin Durant has a sprained MCL. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, or I guess 3 to 5 weeks at this point. Draymond Green is currently out with a calf issue that apparently is stemming from a disc issue, which is not something that you want to hear, especially with someone with the defensive workload that Draymond Green has. And also Lonzo Ball is having surgery to repair meniscus. He's going to be out at least 4 weeks. I've seen 4 to 6 weeks. I've seen 6 to 8 weeks. We'll just go conservative, at least 4 weeks for Lonzo Ball. Where do you want to start first?
Oh, I want to start with turning injuries off, but let's start with Brooklyn. You know, let's widen it out. Obviously, it stinks. KD's been having a heck of a year. It's great to see him back at the level, being the KD we knew. This is going to be interesting for the Nets as far as they've been searching all year long. And now they have to continue to search. And now they have to continue to search without the glue of the lineup, because KD's been kind of the glue.
Mm-hmm.
No Kyrie, that's fine. Two bigs works with KD. Small lineups works with KD. Both ends of the floor. Now you have to try and figure out how to take what you've done and hold on to it with different personnel, and that's going to be interesting. So you think in theory, hey, maybe this unlocks James Harden a little bit more, and maybe this keeps them having to stay focused on the defensive end a little bit more. That's kind of been their deal this year as far as, hey, we have to play defense to win. Obviously, we know they have to step it up a level in the playoffs on that end, but this is a stretch where now maybe they lock in on that a little bit more, and that helps them out in the long run. Also, it kind of opens up some room for some of their young guys. I know you're excited about that. You see Cam Thomas being able to spread his wings a little bit more. You see Kessler Edwards starting to spread his wings a little bit more. They're going to get some important reps over this stretch that will help them get better and possibly have them be pieces you can use in the playoffs. Maybe they can be pieces of the lineup. It helps contribute to your overall depth. It's funny because Kessler Edwards actually checks off a lot of different boxes for the Nets. I mean, obviously they need him to make a little bit more shots, but, and Cam Thomas, I think, has continued to grow the more he gets the minutes in the rep. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage that, but it's kind of another blow for a Nets team that, are you searching? Have you found it? And will it pay off in the long run?
We are going to see. Like, I kind of start with what version of James Harden are they going to get during this stretch? Because I think that's going to answer a lot about what this Brooklyn team is going to be, because it has been a very uneven season for him. Started off poorly, coming back from injuries, rule changes, whatever, you know, whatever reason you want to do there, however you want to weigh that. A lot of different factors went to his slow start. Started to catch a rhythm, and then he's kind of been in and out of rhythm, sporadically in and out of the lineup. It's just been weird for him. And so I think once you remove Kevin Durant out of the picture for a while, it's kind of a sink or swim type dynamic with Harden, I think. I think this is firmly going to be his show. A quick look at the schedule heading into the All-Star break, at least. If I could do math, Brooklyn has 15 games to the All-Star break. I think 10 of those are on the road. So you're going to get, you know, if he stays healthy, a heavy dose of Kyrie in that stretch as well. But even with Kyrie there, this is going to be the James Harden show. Like, he's going to run the offense. He's probably going to run more ball screens than anyone. If he can get back to his elite floor raising ways, then I think Brooklyn has the chance to be not just okay. They could be fine while Kevin Durant gets right. And if you have 10 or 15 games with Kyrie, who has looked good offensively since he's been back, and Harden, like, that's enough to kind of carry you, I feel like. And as you mentioned, like, they're going to have the young guys getting more playing time. And as a brief aside on those young guys, we're going to dig in depth very soon. Next Rookie Report, we're digging into all those guys because it's about that time to do so. But this is going to be important for them. I was going to talk about this a little bit later, but it is interesting timing. Like, we got the KD news earlier this week, and then they have agreed to part ways with one of their depth pieces in the front court, Paul Millsap. And I'm kind of interested to hear your thoughts on, like, how did you feel about that decision? Did that surprise you? Because I didn't see that coming at all.
Well, I mean, he just really hadn't been playing. He hasn't really been a part of the program or the mission for what? I think he's played two of the last 17 games or something like that. So I was surprised in the sense that I thought he could really help Brooklyn, but this seems to be a scenario where you add a player that probably could have helped the team before, in theory. Like, Paul Millsap for them last year, whole different level. Paul Millsap for them this year doesn't hit the same. And it's not necessarily a Millsap deal. I think it's more so just that big man room is crowded, and they have the small ball lineups. and they're trying to figure out the pieces. So you have LaMarcus, you have Claxton, you have Bruce Brown, you have Bembry, you have James Johnson. You have all sorts of guys and combinations you can go with. It's easy for Millsap to kind of fall back, especially if maybe the shots aren't falling or the defense isn't at a certain level. Because for him to get minutes, he has to kind of be that guy defensively. To where, you know, there were possessions early in the season where you could see what he brought to the table, but he was having to do a lot of it. You know, Millsap switching four times in a possession and he gets beast off the dribble. It's like, okay, he could help, but it's, they need a little bit more. So I'm more interested to see where he lands more than anything else. I just think it's one of those deals where the Nets kind of had to make a decision at some point. Can't play everybody. And we've seen what they did with Blake. So I don't know.
Yeah. Also true. Like, it is a crowded front room, but like, it felt like with KD out a month plus, like, you would think that would be the kind of spot where, like, okay, now we can kind of work you into the rotation zone. Like, even if it's, you know, 12 to 14 minutes a night, like, okay, you can give us a little bit of creation, you can give us a little bit of spacing. But I guess they did right by Millsap. He wants to go. Like, while we're on Millsap, what are some places that would intrigue you for him, with him?
Well, the number one place I don't think could ever happen, Utah. Denver, maybe. I'd like to see him in Milwaukee. I'd like to see him in Chicago or Miami. I think Paul Millsap is going to land on a team they can really help in the playoffs when those knees are thawed out.
Okay.
Did you have an ideal spot for Mr. Millsap?
Denver was on my mind. Denver was one. Toronto, just because they need, like, rotation players. I'm not sure how much longer they can go playing, like, running a 6.5-man rotation at this point. So I think getting a veteran that they could trust in the front court would probably be cool. Those are really my two. Like, I would like Miami, but tax stuff, roster stuff, like, I don't know how they make that happen. How do you feel about Boston as a landing spot?
I like the idea of it. I just don't know if I would like it more if they were a little bit better or a little bit more consistent. Because while I think he helps, how much does he help? I think he helps him a lot defensively on paper, but do teams just treat him like Grant Williams? Fair or unfair?
Yeah, I get where you're coming from.
Does he play 5 minutes? Does he play with Horford? Does he play with Williams? Does he stretch out? Like, it could work. I could see it. I wouldn't mind that if Boston tried it, but I don't know if it elevates them as much as it just gives them another piece to hope that works.
Okay. See where you're coming from. And, like, Chicago's also a good spot. I mean, they've just been so banged up as of late. It'd be nice to have some depth there. You can play the 4 or 5 for them. So, I dig it. For Golden State, let's move there. Are you worried at all about Draymond long term? And that's a vague, intentionally vague question. But, like, are you worried about how that might linger?
Well, I'm worried because calf injuries are tricky and back injuries are tricky. And if you combine them, that's not a good thing. So that's why I'm like, just take as much time as you need, because this run is great, but this run doesn't mean anything if you don't have Draymond when it counts. So I would rather he take his time, he get it right, and come back when he's ready than any sort of rush, because any sort of step back, and it's different. You know, Golden State's pretty good, but they need that defense humming. They need him to be that engine for them. So I would say I'm worried if it doesn't get better.
Okay. I'm with you. And with Lonzo being out.
Oh, you brushed past the best part about the Draymond deal. I'm surprised. Whole opportunity for you to talk about Jonathan Kuminga just doing stuff. That's been fun for me. It's uneven, but I love it. Oh, he's just telling him play hard and go do stuff. And he's just doing it.
Yeah, he's a ball of energy at the I don't even know what position you even dub him as at this point. I mean, positions are a social construct at this point anyway. But like, he's a five in a threes body with four responsibilities, except the transition where he just kind of flies around. Like, he's just a fun dude right now. We'll dig into him on the next rookie report as well. But like, it's cool that he's getting these minutes. Hate is coming under these circumstances, but see, you got me going. Thanks.
Hey, that's what I'm here for, man. Back to Lonzo, I'm sorry.
All right, back to Lonzo. I mean, I guess to continue the theme, like, Lonzo's out. Surely we see more Ayo Dosunmu. We'll see if Kobe White keeps it rolling. If you're Chicago, do you just kind of roll with that? Do you look to add another piece?
I think they've been next man up all year, so I think they continue to do that. And I think with the way Io's playing, let him roam free on both ends of the floor. This is a great spot for him to get those reps and contribute to the team on both ends of the floor. I think he's been a spark plug. This is probably why you kept Kobe White, not for the injury, but this is where he can just plug in and play and hopefully find some confidence, find the rhythm, and enhance what he's been doing. So I think they probably just stand pat. Now, the interesting thing to me is going to be, does this become an opportunity to unlock Nikola Vucevic? And we kind of touched on it on the last pod when we talked about the Bulls, but can you find him and get him in a rhythm? Because it's a really interesting point. He's such a powerhouse as far as handoffs and pick and rolls go. You watch some of their games and you'll see him have a pop in a big moment and the shot's there, it's open, and he's just not hitting it. So do you get him some more post-ups? Do you get him more in rhythm? Do you enhance his attack? Get him going. So now as you get healthier, he's at a higher level. He can raise your ceiling a little bit. That's probably what I would lock in more on for the Bulls for me.
Got you. It's going to be – I also just kind of feel bad for the Bulls, honestly. It just – not that this is unique to them in particular, but it feels like they miss a big piece. They get him back. And the second they get the piece back, there are two more dropping out. Like, they just got Alex Caruso back. Such a revolving door. Like, credit to them for staying at the top of the East while they're navigating all these injuries and navigating COVID a little bit earlier in the season and stuff. So testament to their, you know, their mental fortitude, the way that their bench has stepped up, the way that, you know, some of the starters have stepped up. Like, Nikola Vucevic has been playing pretty well as of late. But it's just kind of unfortunate. Like, with Lonzo, with all the guys we talked about, hopefully they get well soon. It's going to be an interesting stretch for all three of the teams involved. Speaking of interesting stretches for teams, can we talk about the Los Angeles Lakers very briefly?
Do we have to? And do you think it's really going to be brief?
You know, brief is also a social construct when it comes to our podcast. But on a serious note, what the heck is happening with this group?
It's a mess. It's a mess right now. It is a mess right now. And I think we've talked about on court, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a good team with either bad habits or inconsistent habits, to where you can watch them and you can see potentially the vision. But the lineups, they still haven't figured those out. We've talked about that. They're still searching. They went all in as far as small ball goes to try and juice the offense up. Now we see them going more towards defense. If you look at the starting lineup, they had, what was it? Westbrook, Ariza, Dwight, LeBron, and Avery Bradley, right? So are they leaning more towards going all in defensively and trying to figure that out? AD still hasn't come back yet. It's a mess. And so I woke up this morning, triggered, because I watched the first half of that game and I was like, okay, Lakers are doing all right. I'm going to go to bed. And I woke up and Frank Vogel's benching Russell Westbrook, supported by the front office. And I was like, what happened here?
Yeah.
And so I worked in the NBA for 5 years. And boy, that sounds conceited to say. But in those 5 years, right? Nikias, check this out. I saw an ownership change. Mm-hmm. A management regime change, a coaching change, an almost coaching change, another front office change, another almost coaching change, and then a front office and a coaching change.
It's a lot of turnover.
Yeah, it's fun stuff, right? Chaos. So this is a mess. So if you give me a scenario where you have a coach's hot seat getting hotter by the day, he's being evaluated day to day, you have management in coaches' meetings, you have a benching endorsed by management, you got to do what you got to do as a quote, and the coach saying, I'm just trying to play the guys to win, it's a lot to process. And so all of this is weird to me. And hey, rein me in if I ever go too far off the rails here, because I'm just going to go.
Okay, before you go, kid, I hope I don't infringe upon any point that you're about to make, because I very much plan to just let you clear out.
I told you.
If I could just ask one question.
Nakaiso Duncan, what'd I tell you?
Don't do this. If I could just ask one, my lone question in this is not my lone question, but most important question I have in all of this. Why is Kurt Rambis allowed to influence any decision? Period.
So I have to ask, is this Kurt Rambis slander? Is this front office management slander? Which one is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Because like his coaching and also assistant coaching and also interim coaching resume kind of speaks for itself. And also the Lakers brought him in anyway. And he's letting his input be known, I guess is one way to phrase it. And so my question is like, why is this a variable that we should even be worrying about?
Because someone wanted him in there. Can't just walk up and walk in.
That's true. But that's the part that sticks out to, because like we've talked about on this podcast and on both of our timelines, we've talked about the Lakers as a whole. We've talked about the Russ dynamic. We've talked about the Frank Vogel dynamic and how much of the criticism is fair and how much of it isn't. Kurt Rambis being a part of this is just odd to me. But anyway, that's all I have.
Well,
the floor is yours.
Well, no, he's swinging this. He's upper level. And that's the trick. That's the tricky part. Well, I can't answer that one. I don't know that one. But that's the tricky part of it. Is once, so for me, I always say, like, you hope that your front office and your coaching staff have the same vision, execute, they have symphony, they fill the pantry, the coaches cook the meals. Once you start coming in the kitchen, things can kind of get weird. And like, once you get to that stage, it's kind of gone left a little bit. And now people know it's kind of gotten to that stage. So if your players know that management's in the meetings, your decisions and thoughts can come off a little different. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that's what's happening here, but it can be. NBA players love genuine people. They hate phonies. Yes, any player in the league, they hate a stooge. So that makes it really tricky. And that kind of ties into what I was going to bring up. Like, all of this timing is very weird, right? So Lakers had that stretch where they gave up a whole bunch of points, lost a whole bunch of games. Then they come back and beat Utah, right? Mm-hmm. Feels like their best game of the year. I'll just say it.
Season's turning.
Defense looked locked in, looked like there was something there. And then the next day, it comes out Vogel was almost out of there. Like, what do you do that? You're just coming off a big win. You're about to go into work. All right, I think we're moving in the right direction. Oh, wait, I almost got fired. Do you know how difficult it is to keep the buy-in if your message is, hey, we're about to turn the corner, we just need to keep working harder? And someone could just look at you and be like, you're not even going to be here next week?
Yeah, I would imagine that's a kind of tough line to walk.
That's nasty. Like, it's nasty. Like, that's tough. Like, and the other part is like, he was just in protocol like 2-3 weeks ago, right?
And that stretch without him did not go well.
They were 1-5 during that stretch. And he came back and they had won 5 out of 8 before the Pacer loss. And so it's like, what momentum are we building here? Like, if your coach and coaching staff is on a day-to-day basis, how do you expect things to progress in a positive fashion? Like, that's, players can feel that. If you watch that Pacer-Laker game, watch the bench. Watch the bench as the Lakers play going forward. It's just Kent Bazemore. It's just Kent Bazemore being excited. Like, that's tough. But anyways, back to my point, right? I'm the buy-in, man. You want to talk about the Russ thing? Because, like, I thought the Russ thing was weird. Like, that, the whole, hey, he got benched because he didn't do the coach's game plan, emphasize forcing Caris LeVert to his left hand, and he didn't do that. Man got beat on a handoff. It was bad defense. I rewatched the game this morning. They were not emphasizing forcing Caris LeVert to his left hand. As a matter of fact, in the fourth quarter, I want to say with 9 minutes left, Caris LeVert brings it up the right side of the floor with his right hand. They ice it to keep him going to his right hand. Doesn't hold weight. Doesn't hold water. Suspicious. And even better, they did actually end up forcing to his left hand with about 4 minutes left. And Westbrook was still on the floor because he didn't get benched after the supposed play that was so horrifying. I don't like that, man. And I think that ties into, and I'm going on a tangent. You want a wild Steve? Here, you got it. I think management was sending a message to Russ. Because why else would they say that they support and gave Frank Vogel, quote unquote, permission to bench or coach Russell Westbrook? I mean, it's a championship-winning coach. I don't know if he needs that.
Mm-hmm. Also, he's just the coach. Like, he could just kind of, in theory, he should just be able to do that, period.
Yeah, but that's where it gets weird to me. Mm-hmm. And I think about it, big picture, right? We talked about it. This Laker team found a template. With this coach, championship-winning coach, championship-winning team, 21-7 to start last year. They couldn't replicate everything they had in the championship season. But they also found another problem. Anthony Davis's health. AD was supposed to be able to help keep LeBron fresh. They keep it rolling. Both of them were gone last year. Mm-hmm. So they pushed all their chips in and they got Russ. And now once you push all your chips in and get Russ, the light shines on who?
Everybody.
Front office, the coach.
Right. Should be both.
So you got Westbrook. Should be both, but you can make it only one. So you get Westbrook, you still try and replicate the formula with a big, and then you try and expand on it by adding shooting and playmakers, but you end up with a bunch of guys who kind of do the same stuff. And now you don't know who to play. Mm-hmm. Like, if I said Stanley Johnson was their fourth best player right now, would I be wrong?
Probably not. Is Austin Reeves third in this case?
Oh, God. Oh, brother.
What do you? I'm just asking the important questions. Like, what?
I don't get it, man. It's a mess. It's a. Go ahead. Whatever you want to say about the Lakers, go ahead.
This is such, like, the situation seems untenable at this point. Like, a head has to roll by All-Star break. It seems like. And that's either going to be doing the unlikely thing and finding a place for Russ, which, because of what they pushed in to get him, because of his contract, because of how it may be viewed against the league, that just doesn't seem like very likely. Or this is going to be Frank Vogel being the scapegoat. And, like, I say that while also acknowledging, like, some of the lineups haven't been great this year. Like, we've talked about it on the pod. And so, like, Vogel hasn't been faultless in the Lakers looking the way they look. But at the same time, with the roster that he was given, the injuries that they've dealt with, and just the overall clunkiness of the Russ fit so far, like, it does kind of reach a point where there's only so much you can do. Especially at this point, like, I personally have to take the L on this Laker team and on the Russ experiment. I wrote about it, I think, a day or two after the trade happened. I was like, okay. I was optimistic on it. Like, this is okay. This is the pathway for this to work. Like, this is why they made the deal. This is how they can make this work. I think I even mentioned, like, hey, maybe Russ might set some screens in the piece. We don't have to rehash that for like the sixth time because, like, it just hasn't happened. But I thought, like, it was certainly a gamble, but one that would ultimately pay off for the Lakers. I had the Lakers coming out of the West this year. I'm not sure if they're going to be out of the play-in with the way they look right now. And that's kind of a failure on everyone involved. The front office for putting the roster together. Vogel for not completely maximizing it. Russ for being fine instead of a third star. And you put all that together, combined with, you know, injuries with the players that might make this roster make a little bit more sense. Like, it's just a whole bunch of mess.
Well, here's where I'll push back a little bit, right? Okay. I don't know where he's supposed to go lineup-wise. Like, I watch him try and search. And so you have a scenario where, okay, Dwight Howard's my best option as a big man. He's also my only option as a big man right now. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't have it, which he did not have it against Indiana in that second half, I have no choice but to go small. Mm-hmm. That puts you in a pickle. And now, as we talked about earlier, hey, do we go with our small defensive lineup or do we go with our small offensive lineup? Mm-hmm. Do we put Melo at the five and hope the drop works and he rim protects a couple times? Or do we put Stanley Johnson in and hope that he can create on the other end? Like, it's just a coaching nightmare right now. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't help that, again, they are just inconsistent defensively in every single way. Even when they have good possessions, they end it with a foul or they don't get a rebound. And then offensively, there's no effort for them to move. Like, they ran flex against Indiana. It took them 12 seconds to set it up. They scored, but why? Like, just, you talk about spacing. There's just no pace. There's no playing outside of the play. There's no multiple attacks. It's just, I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm getting mad, man.
We don't want to put you in a bad mood. The moral of the story is the Lakers are not in a good place right now and something needs to change. I don't know if that's going to be effort. I don't know if it's going to be lineups. I don't know if that's going to be someone's job availability. But something has to shift rather quickly for the Lakers to salvage this.
Day to day, before you go on a 6-game East Coast road trip, come on, man. That's nasty. Don't do that.
They're setting them up to, yeah. Yeah, that's... Kurt Rambis is in the room. This is...
What did Kurt Rambis do to you? Hold on, let me see. Give me your Kurt Rambis take as I search for a Nekias Kurt Rambis tweet.
I don't even know if... Do I have a Kurt Rambis tweet? That's a good question. Like, I can think of one thing that I may have tweeted about Kurt Rambis for, but, like, I don't know if I actually said it or this is, like, group chat material. But that was from the Knick days. If you know, you know, whatever. But, no, he's just not good at his job. That's just kind of...
Nope. Found one. May 16, 2016. With all these candidates out there, both former head coaches and quality assistants, if New York sticks with Kurt Rambis, they should be shut down.
Well, I'm nothing if not consistent. While we're on coaches, what we wanted to do with the pod today is go through our early season award winners right now. Just as it stands, as of we're recording on a Thursday night, as of January 20th, what our award ballots would look like. Let's start with coach of the year, since we're talking about coaches. Steve, who would be your top three right now?
You really want me to start with the coach of the year?
Yes.
The one I battle with the most?
Yes, precisely.
Well, it's not you and Herring this year, so I can shout them all out. get this out the way.
Like, whoa, that's 27 coaches.
Yeah, I know. I'm just going to do real quick. Coach Michael Malone, give him a thumbs up. Doc Rivers deserves way more of a tip of the cap than he's been getting this year to get the most out of the guys in these situations. Steve Kerr's done a hell of a job with this team. And Steve Nash has navigated a whole hell of a lot in year two as far as identity and injuries and all that good stuff. They're not on my list. I had two names I had a tough time not putting on mine. J.B. Bickerstaff.
Ooh, you didn't have him. Okay.
What he's done in Cleveland to get this team to play together, to defend the way they have, to get the buy-in. They like playing with each other, being creative with the multiple big lineups. He's done an unbelievable job. He's number five for me.
Okay.
Billy Donovan. Really had a tough time not putting him up there, especially with what he's done to get this group to mesh at this level this early in their run and to get the most out of DeMar, to get them playing defense, to throw Alex Caruso on anyone who exists in the NBA. Great stuff. But like, it's, for me, it was tough because I feel like there's a lot of good coaching jobs, but I feel like a lot of these guys are in each other's way. But my top three, as you requested, number three, I have Eric Spoelstra.
All right.
I just think he's been a wizard this year as far as keeping this group together, what he's done with the defense, how he's navigated the injuries, how he's gotten the most out of his guys, but also shifted his team when need be. I mean, this was a team that went from post-ups and ISOs and mismatch hunting to we're going to hunt threes and move the ball to now blending it all together. He's number three. Number two, Taylor Jenkins. What he's done with this Memphis team to push them in this level in the Western Conference and take this kind of leap, that deserves a salute. Number one for me is Monty Williams.
All right.
To have this team humming like this on both ends of the floor consistently after the year they had last year, he's going to get the nod for me.
Respect. One, I was honestly expecting you to shout out more coaches than you did. So it's a pleasant surprise. But no, in all seriousness, that's an interesting list. A good list. If I could start with my honorable mentions, I am with you on Billy Donovan and Steve Kerr. They've done great jobs. I wanted to give a quick shout to Chris Finch because I have to give a quick shout to Chris Finch and what he's been able to do with that defense in Minnesota. I have Jason Kidd as an honorable mention as someone who slandered him very much.
He said, what now? I'm choking on my water.
I see. That's a good shot. Oh, man. As someone that has not been favorable to Jason Kidd's coaching on this podcast and on my own timeline, he's coaching up the Mavericks right now, particularly on the defensive end. So Dallas is playing pretty well. They are firmly a playoff team right now. So, a quick hat tip to Jason Kidd. Like, he's been better than I expected him to be in Dallas, to say the least. So I give him a shout.
Also, you wrote a great article on basketballnews.com. I got the plug in before you did. So I won, listeners.
Wow. Check that out. Basketballnews.com wrote about Dallas's surprisingly good defense. They are a top five, or at least they were heading into tonight's action. I'm not sure what the Suns game may do to it. So we'll see. But they've been elite defense so far this year. Also want to shout out Monty Williams, who did not make my top three, but he's doing a phenomenal job in Phoenix. My three, I have Taylor Jenkins at three. I have J.B. Bickerstaff at two. And I have Spo at one for the reasons that you listed. Dealing with injuries. And again, just wholesale shifts with the schemes on both ends of the floor as the personnel kind of shuffles in and out. And to be in a virtual deadlock with the Chicago Bulls, who they've beat twice, I believe, this year. And both of those wins came while missing at least one of their all-star players. Like, one, it's kind of a shame that Spo just doesn't have a Coach of the Year award already. But, like, if there's a year for him to get it, like, I feel like it's, like, this one's a good one for, good year for him to get it. Like, he's done, all of the coaches mentioned have been doing great jobs this year, but he's top of the list for me right now with just how drastic the adjustments he's had to make on a game-to-game basis based on who he's had in and out of the lineup.
Nah, I respect the Spo pick. You know, I think Spo is a magician. I think the voting is going to be interesting because I do wonder and think if it's just going to be whoever was best in the East, whoever was best in the West, and then Taylor Jenkins. And that's just going to be it.
I hope it's not that.
Well, here's the problem, though. You only usually get one of these we didn't think you were going to be that good type teams. Mm-hmm. So it feels like Taylor and JB Bickerstaff are almost in each other's way. And you usually get one of these juggernaut votes, right? So I feel like Monty and Steve Kerr are kind of in each other's way. And then depending on how you feel about the other jobs that have been done, it could be a lot of splitting. So that's where it gets interesting for me. But I don't think you can go wrong with that list.
I feel that. Shout out to the Sixer fans that are still listening to the pod after you said nice things about Doc Rivers. we'll see how that's going to be received over the weekend. Let's start with most improved player, which is one that I probably spent too much time thinking about, to be completely honest. I can kick this one off if necessary. I have two Cavs on the list. I'll spoil it there. I have Darius Garland at 3. You know, this, not necessarily a full-blown shift, but like he's grown in virtually every area offensively. The way that he's running that offense, being more aggressive as a pull-up shooter, being more comfortable as a scorer, the interior passing is there. Like he's running one heck of a shift in Cleveland. Number 2, I have Jared Allen. Defensively, he's improved to the point where not only is he a legitimate rim protector, you know, we've both talked about it, more so you have talked about it on the podcast this season, like what he's doing on the perimeter is insane right now. And then offensively, like he's always been a very good rim runner, but what he's doing on post-ups this year, the way that he's able to establish position, get those deep seals, he's finishing through contact better, showing a little bit more craft as an interior finisher. The passing, like you saw some of the flashes, at least I did, as someone that doesn't, you know, watch literally every Cavs game. But like I saw some passing growth from him last season once he joined the Cavaliers. Processing was a little bit quicker in short roll situations. This year, it seems like he's just nailing high lows with more regularity. So just watching his growth as a scorer, as a defender, and again, like the impact's obviously there. Like I think he deserves a nod. And then number 1, even with the dip in 3-point shooting over the last month or so, number 1 still Miles Bridges for me. The leap that he's taken, more so offensively than anything, just more comfort getting downhill, more comfort creating for himself. Similar to Jared Allen, like last season, if you were watching Hornet games, especially when LaMelo was down, you saw 2 or 3 passes every game where it's like, wait, that's not a swing to the corner after the defense rotates. Like this dude is firing darts. He's like reading a third defender. Like he's making reads that you wouldn't expect from him. He's not just dunking the ball. Like there's more there than just knocking down corner threes and dunking on people. And so now he's starting to put that more together. We're seeing more passes on the move. We're seeing more self-creation from him. The 3-point shooting is down from the earlier in the year. Like if that kept up, he's an all-star 3-point shot would have stayed where it was beginning of the season. So he's below that level for me, but he's just spread his wings to a degree I didn't expect.
No, I respect that. I like putting both Cavs on there. I think Garland definitely has a significant case just based on what he's done for this team, as you stated. And then the strides Jared Allen has made that you stated as well. I don't want to step on either of those. The most improved player of the award gets really tricky for me. And so I'm going to list my 3, but I have a sinking feeling just based on who's won it the last few years. If you look at it, Giannis, Oladipo, Pascal Siakam, Brandon Ingram, Julius Randle. I have a sinking feeling Ja Morant wins this. And because I feel like this award has kind of shifted from AR bad for thinking you were trash to you made a leap and are good and we need to put you somewhere. So here's your recognition. I didn't vote that way, but I just wanted to get that point out there.
Ed Fuller's Jaws, my first honorable mention on my list. So I'm with you.
I have a feeling that's how it goes. I wish it wouldn't. I think he's past that, but that's just me. Number three, I have Anfernee Simons. His leap, shooting the ball, the consistency he's displayed as being a rotation player. You definitely got the answer to that question if you're Portland. That's my number three. My number two is Miles Bridges. I did not have him becoming a 20-7 guy night in and night out. And so I don't want to step on most of what you said, but he's been really good for Charlotte this year. Mm-hmm. But a big piece of why they are where they are. My number one, though, Desmond Bane.
Ah, there we go.
And for him to get more time, more opportunity, more responsibility, and still produce like this on a nightly basis, that gets the nod for me. I mean, like, if you double your attempts, double your three-pointers, and still shoot the same while also playmaking, while also defending, that's a pretty big leap. And he's been a big piece of Memphis' run. So I'm all aboard the main train for most improved player.
I respect it. Before we move on to our next award, did you have any honorable mentions for most improved? Like you mentioned Ja, but who else was kind of on your short list for you?
Well, see, that's where it got tricky for me. Who was Ja your only one?
He was not.
Who else?
Again, like I spent a lot of time because like
you got a deep list, don't you?
Yeah. See, like most improved for me is kind of like, all right, is it this guy? We know who he is, but he also just improved on these skills. Is it okay? This guy is now playing 10 more minutes and he's taking on this workload and looks good still. Like I feel like I had like four different subsections of improved cases. So like, I also had Desmond Bane on my list. You know, obviously I had Miles Bridges as a winner. Oh, you see just the big statistical jump. But then, you know, Andrew Wiggins is an honorable mention for me. Where it's like, okay, no, there isn't a big, you average 15, now he's averaging 22, but it's more like, okay, he's refined what he does and who he is. And we saw, you know, the outline of that role last year in Golden State, and now he's knocking down 40% of his threes and he's still defending at a high clip and he's still finishing at a high clip. So, like, that's there. I have Kyle Kuzma on my list. I have Fred VanVleet on my list. So, like, I just have a wide spectrum of different cases, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, it's the beauty of it. It's up to the interpretation, because I also had DeJounte Murray on mine. But you could argue this is just an extension of the leap he made last year. But the man is playing at a very high level. I mean, you could probably, if you wanted to look at stats, say Tyler Hero, I probably wouldn't go there. But he's a thought bubble that I had. But it kind of just depends on how you want to define it. You know, is this someone who took a leap and got better and really improved? Or is this someone who was good and got even better? And that's where I feel like the shift is right now as far as voting with that one goes.
Very true, very true. One question for you before we move, just a general philosophy question. How do you feel about second-year guys being in the running? Should they be, or do you say that for like third-year guys and older?
If you're going to be a second-year guy, you got to make a heck of a leap. Or you had to either have not been great your first year or had a lot of question marks that you definitively answered for me.
Okay. All right, that's fair. Let's move to rookie of the year. I feel like we're going to have the same top guy and the rest of it's going to vary a bit. Who do you have? What's your rookie of the year ballot right now?
I did not enjoy doing this. There are four for me, but you can only list three. Right now, as we stand, I have Franz Wagner 3, Scotty Barnes 2, Evan Mobley 1. But Cade is coming.
Okay. Well, this is going to be extremely boring. That is literally my list. And I have Cade as my top honorable mention. So, okay. I'm glad we're on the same page there. We don't have to go super deep into defense, but player of the year, since we just did the defense episode last year. Do you have any changes from your list?
No. Defensive player of the year still goes 1 Draymond, 2 Giannis, 3 Rudy Gobert. Although I have thoughts about Rudy Gobert guarding Jay Sean Tate. We'll save him for a rainy day.
Okay. All right. RIP to your minions. My top three remains the same. I still have Draymond, Rudy Gobert at 2, Giannis at 3. Just going to keep an eye on that. And then all defensive, did you have any changes there?
I sure did.
Oh, okay.
I sure did. Bam Adebayo is back.
Okay.
And very quickly, Bam Adebayo reminded the world who Bam Adebayo is defensively. So yes. He is back on my second team.
Okay.
I have waved goodbye to Matisse Thybulle. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So my first team was Drew, Mikal Bridges, Draymond, Giannis, and Rudy Gobert. Second team is now Alex Caruso, Marcus Smart, Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, and Joel Embiid.
Okay. Well, you had, last year I had the games played minimum, 70% of games. This year I had it at 60%. So Bam's off just because of that. But on a per possession or per game basis, yeah, he's that guy. He's absolutely that guy. What he did in Portland last night was just absurd. A couple of times I hopped off my couch yo, this dude just got back after 2 months and he's already defending at a high clip. He's freaking incredible.
have you addressed your Mikal Bridges Giannis error?
I'm trying to find a way to wedge Mikal onto the first team again now. Cause it's literally just a case of him being the third best forward. That's really the only issue. It sliding him to guard moves Caruso or Drew down, which I don't necessarily love on. I mean, they're all within the same tier. So I can't really go there. If there's going to be a change, cause we're going to do an update later in the year, Lonzo's probably going to drop off the list for me. And he was already he was my last guard spot anyway. But now that he's going to be out a month plus, now I can go back into my honorable mentions bag in terms of guards. I had, Fred VanVleet, Marcus Smart, Derek White, and Herb Jones up there. So one of those four, probably Smart. But other than that, my list is still, it still is what it is. So that was Caruso, Drew, Giannis, Draymond, and Gobert on the first team. And then it was Lonzo, Thybulle, Bridges, Vanderbilt, and Embiid. So you dropping Lonzo off for Marcus Smart, that would kind of be my big shift there. So that is where we are on the defensive teams. Let's go with the all rookie teams. Do you want to name both or do you want to just kind of alternate first team, then second team?
I think we should both name our first team. I think they'll be similar. I'm curious about the second team, okay. How you went there. So I'll cede the floor to you, our resident young guru.
Very fun. Okay. So I had 4 locks on the first team. 2 weeks ago, it would have been 5 locks, but I had 4 locks on the first team.
Number 5 is where it gets interesting.
Yeah.
The four we can list off right away.
Yeah, so 4, Cade is one of the guards, Franz is a forward, Scotty's a forward, Evan Mobley's a big. And then we got to the 5th spot for me, where, again, a couple of weeks ago, would have been all right, Josh Giddey, cool. But what Herb Jones is doing in New Orleans is not to be slept on. The defense kind of speaks for itself, or at the very least, if you're listening to this podcast, I assume that you just got to watch a little bit of everyone. We're just that kind of a deep cut pod. But in the case that you aren't, Herb Jones is one of the best wing defenders in basketball now. Period. No caveats needed. Just one of the best wing defenders in basketball, period. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, he was an honorable mention for an all-defensive team already. So that's what he's doing. Offensively, knocking down spot-ups, showing some intrigue as a driver and as a passer. Again, no in-between game to speak of right now. But, he's legitimately impacting basketball on both ends of the floor. I cannot say that's the same for Josh Giddey. The playmaking is there for him. Obviously, rebound score is not very efficient. But, he's filling the stat sheet for me. That's I end up getting torn between Giddey and Herb Jones. I have Giddy on the first team for now, but like I'm not very far from putting Herb Jones on my first team.
Well, see, that's the interesting part. I had the Giddy and Herb debate, but then I also had the Giddy and Io debate for first team.
That's fair.
With what Io is doing. Now, I don't know if Io's going to keep getting this run, so usage will be interesting, but he's definitely put up a very, very solid campaign. I also left Josh Giddy, so I went Mobley, Barnes, Franz, Cade, and Josh Giddy. I have my question marks about Giddy, but he is carrying a lot of weight in Oklahoma City. So I'm going to factor that in for him as far as the production goes. The second team is where the fun begins, because I know you have a curveball. So I'm going to get mine out of the way.
Okay.
And see where you land.
All right.
Because I have two names on this that I'm not as sure about as I was earlier in the season. So my second team, Herb Jones, Jalen Green, Io, Chris Duarte, and Davion Mitchell.
Okay. Yeah, our teams are different.
And this is, this is why I love it.
Which is the fun part. Okay. I also have Io. I also have Chris Duarte. I also have Herb Jones. I have Şengün and Yurtseven to close it out. I don't have Jalen yet. It's hard for me to ignore how he started the season, as well as the large swath of games that he missed. He's been much better since he's been back. So by the time we do the update, like, he's probably going to be on the team for me. But to this point, I don't have him. And Yurtseven was kind of a late add, because I was kind of between him and Austin Reeves, but then Austin Reeves missed a bunch of time. But
so Jalen Green's below those two?
Look, man.
Let me get some milk for that hot take. No.
Is that hot? Like, mostly because of, again, how bad he was early and then missing a bunch of time. Like, Jalen Green wasn't a major consideration for me this go around. Again, to clarify, that says nothing about how I feel about his overall ceiling, what he's going to look like. Again, he's been very good since he's been back. So, like, assuming he continues to build off of that, like, it's going to be a no-brainer. He's going to make a team. But as of January 20th, I don't have him on. But the stretch Yurtseven started for Miami kind of gets him on for me.
I can dig the Yurtseven one. Man had like solid defensive stretches for a really good team and held it down. Got all the rebounds you needed. I'm going to need the Şengün one. I'm going to need some help on that one. I haven't seen his production consistently. I'm sorry. I love him, but help me out.
That's fun. Like, it may very well just be, I don't want to say complete aesthetic bias, but like, I've liked the flashes I've seen with him as a playmaker. He has been a little bit better defensively than I thought he would be, especially when they do show him higher on screens. But like, that activity's been there. And like, when they've given him, you know, 20, 25 plus minutes, like, he has been productive in those minutes. And so that's kind of where I was like, all right, I can give him the second team nod for now. But like, I don't begrudge you for not having him on.
I sure hope not. I'll give the nod to Duarte scoring and Davion's defense for now. But Cam Thomas and Kessler Edwards and Yurtseven were all knocking on the door for me.
Oh man, I can't wait till we do this in a couple months and De'Ron Sharpe is on the team. I can't wait for the De'Ron Sharpe talk. It's gonna be great.
Hey, if he can just figure it out defensively, that kid's got something. But we'll save that for the rookie report. A tease, as they would say.
There we go. The all NBA teams.
This is where the magic happens, folks.
Yeah, how much fun did you have concocting these?
A little bit. I used a couple hacks, but a little bit.
That was going to be my next question. How much positional smudging did you do?
Just two.
Okay.
which is not as bad as last year where I just used the hack to put Jokic and Embiid on the first team because I didn't want to choose.
Yeah. Oh, God, don't get me back started. You just think either of those guys is a freaking forward. Like, what are we doing, bro?
Infuriated you to no end.
What are we doing?
There's no way I was going to do that.
You know what? I'm glad you said that. They actually had... Because, look, both of them were... I know Embiid was, but I think both could be listed as a forward, right? Or was it just Embiid?
Let me check real quick while you rant.
Because I know for a fact Embiid could be listed as a forward. And I'm just like, so you mean to tell me the, like, 16 seconds Joel Embiid and Dwight Howard played together was enough for them to have Embiid eligible at forward? But DeMar DeRozan is just guard.
This man will not let it go.
I'm not letting it go. No, that doesn't make sense to me.
He's been a guard his whole career.
Joel Embiid's been a center his whole career. I can't fathom. Like, again, I am forced to care about this kind of nitpicking because the NBA won't just do away with the positions. If they just say, all right, cool, all-star best 12 guys, all-NBA best 15 guys, if you go there, I don't care. Cool. I can do that. But if you're going to tell me for all-star, it's two backcourt, three frontcourt, and for all-NBA, it's two guard, two forward to the center, like if that's the parameter that I have, I now have to care about how you're designating these positions and why.
Jokic did receive a vote as a forward last year.
And, like, that's ridiculous.
Got the majority of the lion's share at center, but did get a couple sprinkled in there forward.
That's so absurd to me.
I love that you just get riled up about this.
Oops, it doesn't make sense.
Which I tell you, I put LeBron at the five.
Oh, no, you didn't. No, I will end this podcast. Absolutely. And I say this as someone that wrote the wall, LeBron at five. Like, no, 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 no. If you go, I'm glad you said that. If you go LeBron at five after we just had that 37 tweet thread about DeMar DeRozan starting at guard for like a month and then moving to forward for like three. No, you do not have license to do that. Absolutely not.
Well, let's wait till I put James Harden at the four.
Y'all got it. Okay. You know what? My all-NBA first team, I have Steph and Ja as my two guards. I have Giannis, Durant, and Jokic to close out the front court. And there's an asterisk with Durant because obviously he's about to miss a month plus. So we'll see where the games played end up with him by the time we update this. But like as of now, Durant's on the list for me. Who is your first team?
You ready for the fun?
Here we go.
Stephen Curry.
Okay.
DeMar DeRozan.
All right.
Kevin Durant, Giannis, and Jokic.
Okay. A fair pick. DeMar DeRozan's been very good. Head forward. But anyway, who's your second team?
I have Joel Embiid at the center.
Okay.
I have Draymond Green.
All right.
I have LeBron James.
Okay.
Ja Morant.
Mm-hmm.
And Luka.
Okay. My second team, I have Trae Young. I have Zach LaVine. At forward, I have DeMar DeRozan. I have LeBron James, and I have Joel Embiid as my second team center.
Okay. Very interesting. LaVine and Trae as second team players. I like it. So I'll throw my third team out here real quick.
All right.
At center, I have Rudy Gobert.
Okay. Begrudgingly.
Forward, I have Jimmy Butler.
Okay.
And Devin Booker. My two guards, Donovan Mitchell and James Harden.
Okay. We did get some fudging. I respect it. Okay. I have Rudy Gobert at center. I have Draymond Green at forward. I have Luka at forward. I have Devin Booker at guard, and I have Donovan Mitchell at guard.
Quick timeout.
Okay.
Two things I want to say to all the hashtag dunkers out there. Did you go on this whole rant and then put Luka at forward?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hashtag you are who you call. Like, and for what it's worth, like, that's consistent with me, because every time I've been asked about best point guard in the league list, I never have Luka on my list. So this isn't out of the realm for me.
This man went on the whole rant, put Luka. Let me look up this thing real quick. Also, where's Chris Paul?
Chris Paul is a very, very, very late cut for me. And by very late, I mean I was going between him and Booker.
Interesting. All right, let me see. Let me see if anyone joined you on the Luka train last year. I'm looking at these results. Live podcasting. Very fun. Yeah, I already found someone. Oh, Candace Parker also voted him as a forward, so I take it all back.
There we go. We here. That is the ally I need.
That's the one you want.
There we go. So honorable mentions for me. If I can... okay, I'm absolutely not going to go through this whole list because that is awful podcasting. I will go through my quote unquote short list of honorable mentions. That features James Harden, Fred VanVleet, Jimmy Butler, as the games rile up. He's going to be on the team. I think he's at 27 games played right now, but he's going to be on the team. Pascal Siakam, who has been phenomenal for the last month and a half. Jason Tatum, Chris, I already mentioned Chris Paul, I believe. Drew Sabonis and Jared Allen, who is not far off from that third center spot.
Ooh, Rudy Gobert slander.
Not slander. It's just a testament to how good Jared Allen's been.
RIP to your mentions, buddy.
Okay.
Paul George probably could have gotten a nod if he had stayed healthy. Mm-hmm. Trey Young only got dinged because of the Hawks record. Did you know they're like that far out of the play-in right now?
Yeah, it ain't great.
I looked at the standings, so I was like, I wonder where the Hawks are. And I was like, wait a minute. Chris Paul, I had a tough time leaving him off, mm-hmm. but I feel like him and Booker are just going to split, unfortunately. LaVine, I didn't like that. I couldn't get him in there. Karl-Anthony Towns is a sleeper for the third team for me.
I feel that.
Drew Holiday is going to be tough to crack, but he's been really, really good. Other than that, I mean, Tatum could make an argument. I almost put Embiid on the first team. I had to slow myself down. But I almost put him over Jokic. That's my least favorite basketball argument right now, by the way.
See, I have commentary on that, but I'm...
Give it up.
I saw an argument with Jokic and Embiid. And the argument was pro Embiid. And all of the reasons listed for choosing Embiid were also applicable to Jokic and then some. So it was odd to me that the argument went the way that it did. I just want more people to appreciate what Nikola Jokic is doing. He's been better than he was last year on both ends of the floor.
Nah, he's been really good.
Again, like if this is just, if the NBA would be like, hey, give us the best 15 players for all NBA, I would be fine, considering Durant's about to be out. I'd be fine with having Embiid and Jokic on the first team. That would be dope for me.
Here's the thing, man. If they opened it up the way you're saying, both of them might get squeezed.
Would they though?
You might see it. Steph, KD, Giannis, LeBron will get more votes. And insert guard. There's your five. That'd be my prediction. And then you'd be the biggest, Matt.
It's either that or I would just get completely slandered for the take that I would have on this podcast. But that's fine. But okay. We got through it. Sixth man of the year, which I feel like you're going to yell at me. But...
Hold on. Are you about to hit me with another Joe Ingles push for sixth man of the year?
Oh,
are we heading in this direction
year? Absolutely
this
year? Not.
Okay, because that was a lot. And
I will look. Joe Ingles has not been, he just hasn't been good this year, my Lord. But last year, Joe Ingles was a better basketball player than Jordan Clarkson. If that's a hill that I die on, bring flowers to the funeral. That's fine.
I think this is my favorite part about doing this podcast. Nekias has like plus 15 ability to just Euro step past an L.
What do you
So like you come with the charge. Think of like coming to take a charge as like, hey, here's the L you need to take. And he Euros past it.
What do you
mean? Maybe the ball goes out of bounds. Maybe he doesn't make the shot, but he doesn't take the charge. And then the next time down, he's right back to trying to get a layup.
This is incredible. What would you like for me to say about Joe Ingles?
No, I was just being facetious. What's your sixth man of the year list?
Okay. All right. Number one, I do have Tyler Hero right now. Number two, I have Kevin Love. Number three, I have Gary Payton II. You can't see the video. Steve just like collapsed on his couch. He cannot believe that I have GP2 on my list.
We have the same top two, and I was thinking you were going to hit this number three, and here comes GP2. The floor is yours.
See, the funny thing about that is that he is also hitting three, so that's cool. But like knocking down spot ups, doing dirt as a cutter, filling the lanes in transition. Defensively, he's been insane. Individually, and also because of his defensive prowess, is something we talked about on the pod. He unlocks so much for Golden State schematically between their different types of zones and stuff. He has been, if you want to talk about impact, like he's been, if we're to go with the Ingles thing, like he has just been one of the most impactful bench guys in the league. And so I am more than fine with giving him my third spot. Like, there are better numbers guys in my honorable mentions list. Like Kelly Oubre missed a cut for me. Montrezl Harrell missed a cut for me. Cam Johnson's been really good this year. I think he deserves more.
Wow. Hey, no, I'm proud of you for the Trez praise. He was on my honorable mention list.
Here we go. So he's doing the thing. Team's bad, so it's not going to matter. But like Buddy Hield's been doing some pretty good things in Sacramento offensively. Like we already know what he does as a shooter, but like the way that he's able to get to it off the bounce now with more fluidity, it's legitimately dope. There's a guy I had an asterisk by that on principle, I can't include him, but his play deserves to be recognized anyway. Ricky Rubio was very good before the injury. That's all I could say about Ricky Rubio. Because
how many games does he start?
Like, I think that ends up knocking him out. And then also like goes back to last year, right? If it's sixth man of the year, you can't have two people on the same team. So like I would have had to choose one anyway. And so K-Love got the nod.
Oh, back to that. Okay, I got you.
So yeah, that's what the asterisk is for. In terms of production, like before he went down, like easy argument can be made that he was one of the three best bench players in basketball.
So wait, if you had a bench and two guys were playing great, you wouldn't vote for both of them?
For the same, no. I choose the best one. Like, no. I wouldn't. Like, again, I'm fine being in the minority on that. But like one of them, by definition, one of those guys has to be the seventh man.
Won't they come at the same time?
It's still 6 and 7. But they're two separate players. Like it can't be.
Both great.
Just choose the better one.
I had Melo as my third.
Okay.
I did not. It's Kelly Oubre.
All right.
It's Tyler Hero, Kevin Love, and Kelly Oubre. I was trying to get a reaction.
Oh man, more Euro steps, you know.
You want to do the MVP? You want to do the MVP?
Yes. It's time. It's fun time. It is fun time. First, who are your honorable mentions for MVP?
I have a category. I usually try and keep a top eight.
Okay.
So I try and build my list out. So solid names that I could make an argument for.
Mm-hmm.
Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker both slipped out here recently. So the names I have that are out in no particular order. We're only naming our top three, right?
Five for MVP.
Oh, never mind. I have three names that are out. LeBron, mm-hmm. Ja Morant, and DeMar DeRozan.
Okay.
Those are my three names that are out right now.
Okay. We are on the same page at this point. Okay. Do you want to go first on this one?
I'll go first because I'm boring. My top four has been my top four all year long. My number five has been the rotating wheel. So right now, number five for me is Joel Embiid.
Okay.
The run he's been on, insanity. Now, my number four is Jokic.
Okay.
My number three is Steph Curry.
All right.
My number two for now, I made this list pre-injury, Kevin Durant. My number one is Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Okay. All right. So why Jokic at four for you?
Those top four rotate for me. So just as of right now, and it's unfair because the load he has to carry and he's been incredible, mm-hmm. but Giannis has been so good. KD has been so good on both ends of the floor. And Steph has just been a monster opening a whole everything up for Golden State, even with the recent slump. So if you'd asked me a couple weeks ago, probably would have had, maybe a month ago, I probably had it Steph, Giannis, Jokic. But it ebbs and flows. Like those are my four right now. So right now, of course, after what do you have, a 49-point triple-double last night? Just light. But yeah.
As one does, you know.
That's where he falls for me right now. But it's he's gonna move up because KD's out.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to get your rationale though. That's fine. As mentioned just a little bit ago, we had the same honorable mentions with Bron Ja and DeMar DeRozan in whatever order you want to put them in. My five, I also have Joel Embiid at five. I had KD at four. And like with the injury, like that's going to slide even more, obviously. But I had KD four. I had Steph three, as you did. I have Jokic two. Like the numbers speak for themselves, the load that he's had to carry. Something that I talked about a little bit earlier this season on the pod, like the defensive growth from him. Like he's been good as a show high guy for the last few seasons. If you've been paying attention, we have. But if you've been paying attention in Denver, you would know that he's been fine at that. But the fact that he's actually been, at least in the early part of the season, he was a good drop defender too. It's like, huh. A little bit more growth here in addition to what he's already doing offensively. So he's been insane. He's two for me. Number one is Giannis, who has... What is there to say about Giannis at this point? Most dominant paint guy in the game. Passing is getting better. More comfort in the mid-post area. Defensively flying all over the place. Major part of what Milwaukee wants to do defensively this year since they're playing more aggressively. So many games that he's just taken over fourth quarters in this season. He is the best bet. If he's not the best player in basketball, he's number two at worst. And so Giannis gets the nod for me for MVP right now.
No, I mean... Giannis has been playing free. It's been a joy to watch him just continue to grow. The moments you can see where he's just deciding, I'm taking over the game offensively. And the confidence he has in that jump shot, the confidence he has in the passing. Like, my favorite thing is when he brings it up in transition and teams decide to bring the wall out and he just says, I mean, that's fine. Here's a dime. Deal with that. Or when he's sizing guys up now and going to his step back or take him to the post for the fadeaway, like just different stuff. And then sometimes he just mixes in that brute force. But doing it on both ends, he gets the nod from me. He's still number one for me.
That's fair. A MVP adjacent question that keeps popping up
Chris on Paul,
my
right?
timeline. Yeah. Like, where are you at on Paul versus Booker in the MVP race?
Well, you can only pick one.
Right.
I could understand leaning more towards Chris Paul for the MVP. if only because he adds a lot of value to what they do, fourth quarter wise, consistency wise. Devin Booker's growth, you could argue, has surpassed and probably made him, quote unquote, the best player on that team. But I can understand how it could be the same rinse and repeat as last year, which is you're going to love, as Chris Paul gets the credit for the guts
and hashtag the best leadership team in the West.
So to me, I think that's what's probably going to end up giving him the nod over Devin Booker. They're going to split. So fortunately.
Oh man. Okay. Going back to all NBA for a moment, you had Harden on your third team? Remember that correctly?
Yeah, 13.
Okay. Was he a lock to make a team for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was in there. The question was going to be who was the sixth guard. I almost had Ja on my first team, but then I decided to give that to DeMar and make sure I could put Draymond on there. The forward spot got tricky on the third team. I mean, you could probably choose your own adventure there if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
Jimmy was a lock for me, just with what he does for that team. I didn't want to not recognize Devin Booker and make it a Devin Booker or Mitchell thing. But the problem is there's so many good guards. The thing for me with James is I give him the credit. The shooting's down, but he's still averaging 22, 10, and 8. Like, he's not even fully James Harden. So I'm going to give him the nod. I'm going to still call him a top 15 player in the league.
Okay, that's fair. And like, obviously Harden ended up making 13. Did he? Oh, no, I didn't have Harden. Correct. So like, I think that he hasn't even been James Harden part is kind of what held them off for me. Because I know what he can do. And we've seen flashes of that this year. But like the start of the year has been so wonky for him. And like, as much as we talk about how uneven the offense has been for him in terms of the explosion, getting to the rim, if the jumper's falling, if it's not, like that's just kind of whatever. The defense has been consistently bad for him this year. Like he's back to Houston levels defensively. It hasn't been great. And so I couldn't go there with him. Personally. Actually, speaking of a guard putting up guardy numbers right now, like how close is LaMelo to making a team for you?
It's tough. I could see him entering the conversation, but he's still, for me, he'd have to outgun LaVine, Chris Paul, and Trae Young. And he's not there yet for me. He's on the rise, but it would take another leap for me to throw him in there. It's tough. It's tough enough to give Donovan Mitchell a shout out. Where are you at with him? You think it's closer? It's closer? I'm off?
No, I don't think you're off. Like, I mean, I didn't have him on my team, obviously. It's just like the play has picked up for him as of late. And like the Hornets are, one, still very much in the playoff hunt. And two, they've been defending well for the last couple of weeks, which is an interesting development that I have to dig a little bit deeper in. But I don't know. Like, just keep an eye on LaMelo. Like, I've had my quote unquote issues with him. Like, I've, you know, talked about it on the pod where it's like, okay, like he's been objectively good, but also like, where's the leap exactly? Like, where is the substantial growth defensively? Where is the substantial growth of the score and stuff? But like, he's starting to pick up his play at the plate. And so, that combined with Charlotte still being good, like they're 500 as I look at the NBA app. Like, I just wonder like if he's going to make a real push here very soon. So I just want to see where you were on that.
All-star?
It's going to get tight. It's going to get tight.
I don't think you had him in last time. So I was curious.
I did not. Like, he was one of my last cuts.
He's behind Garland and Fred VanVleet for you, right?
Yes.
If I recall correctly. Okay. Now, I do have a question for you as well. Okay. Now, when you mentioned most improved player, you did mention Kyle Kuzma, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, folks, the hashtag is Big Agenda. January 11th, Kendrick Perkins. Kuzma may dress crazy and weird as hell, but when it comes down to what's happening between those lines, I can't front. His basketball game is on another level. I'm talking most improved player type basketball. Carry on, ..
This is disgusting. Like, I feel like I need to start. Maybe that's what I need to start doing in show prep. Like, whenever I feel like I'm going to mention a team or a player, let me go make sure that there isn't any overlap just so this bit can die out.
And Darius Garland is a lock for you all-star game-wise, right?
I had him on the team when we did the all-star episode, yes.
All right, the hashtag is Big Agenda. January 12th, Kendrick Perkins. I've watched Darius Garland night in and night out. His game is super mature, and his presence makes his Cavs team go. He won't need to travel anywhere because the all-star game is already in Cleveland. Carry on, ..
Oh, man. Did you have any more? Was that
any more,
it?
Any more what, man? Is this the most aligned we've been award-wise, by the way?
Yeah. Granted, I mean, the sample size is small, but like, yeah, like we pretty much hit it on the head, rookie of the year. MVP was, and we had the same five names and the same winner. So we're getting closer, you know?
I'm trying to figure out how I can spice this up. I don't think I can, though. It is what it is. Great players are great players. Is there anyone that you have just shifted on at this point of the season where you didn't think they were very good and now you've just flipped a whole corner? We'll just create an award.
Ooh, someone that wasn't good.
Not even most improved. Someone were just like, hey, I'm shocked by this. I came with some heat.
You did come with some heat indeed. Like, closest answer on the top of my head would probably be D'Lo. I've been very hard on him on this podcast. But like, again, you know, mentioned during the defense episode, like, the defense communication from him has been important to what Minnesota's done this year. And like, he is competing on that end. Again, still like screen navigation issues, but like, he is competing defensively. Like, he has a very clear cut role as a communicator that adds positive impact. And offensively, the pull up shooting and the playmaking kind of speaks for itself. So that's probably, I'm just going to go through a list of players just to make sure I'm not missing anyone else. But I think he's probably going to be my answer.
Are we sleeping on Tyrese Maxey when it comes to most improved player?
I mean, this also falls into the second year thing. Like, he was one of the guys where I'm just like, I don't know if I want to do that. Like, he has legitimately, it's not just I got more minutes, so therefore I'm putting up numbers. Like, he has legitimately gotten better from last year. Like, I just wouldn't have, like, I'm kind of with you. Like, it needs to be egregious in a good way for a second year guy to get it from me. Like, I don't think he's been better. I don't know if he's been that.
Could Gary Trent Jr. get on an all-defensive team?
I thought about Gary Trent Jr. as a most improved candidate. Like, he was on the longer list. I ended up trimming down. I don't know if I can get there with all defensive, but, like, he's been good. Like, is he still, like, top five in steals?
I want to say yes, but I should probably research that, be responsible with my platform. He's number four.
Okay. So, yeah, didn't see that coming. I wouldn't put him over any of the guards that got cut for me, which was Herb and Fred and Marcus Smart, who he's going to make the team over Lonzo. So I have him below that. So I don't think I can get there as far as him being close, but he's been good. He deserves a shout.
Bojan Bogdanović or Tobias Harris?
Oh, goodness, Boyan.
Oh.
Tobias has been stinky this year. It's kind of unfortunate.
Wow. Oh, to answer my own question, Jaren Jackson Jr. was my person that turned everything around for me.
Okay.
Mainly the defense. I knew what his talents were potential-wise, but he's put a lot of things together. Eric Gordon or Will Barton?
We are a team rim pressure on the side. We'll go Eric Gordon.
Okay. Lauri Markkanen or Yusuf Nurkic?
Which day is Yusuf Nurkic playing on?
Ends with Y.
Ah. Thought you were going to give me an out. Jeez. Nurk.
Max Strus or Kevin Herter?
Ooh. Talk about... Oh, man. Can't wait for Max Strus to be in the most improved race next year. It's going to be great. Like, I still go Herter, but, like, Strus has been good.
Terrence Mann or Dorian Finney-Smith?
Jesus, talk about a deep cut. Okay. Boy, this is the dunker spot through and through. Jesus Christ. How did you pull that out of your hat? Like, what was the prompt? Like, you know what? This is going to be...
Call me Washington. I'm a wizard.
Wow. That was... Oh, no. Absolutely the heck not. I'll go... I'm so mad at this question. God. Dorian's better defensively. Terrence can put the ball on the deck a little bit more than Dorian can. Shoot, man. We'll go Dorian.
Mo Bamba or Chris Boucher?
God. I hate everything about Can I say this is also an awful time to ask this question? Because like the last two times I've watched Chris Boucher play basketball have just been the entire Chris Boucher experience, in which he is blocking three pointers and then also playing 2K without an X button.
Have you ever thought about how you could explain Chris Boucher? Because on paper, he has every tool you would want.
Yes.
In a basketball player. And then he just does things. And then he makes like 6 threes in a row. He's rotating, blocking shots. And then he just does more things. And it's like,
huh. There's a reason he is on the contract that he's on. And he's playing the role that he's playing. The best version of Chris Boucher is like an all-star center. However, we simply did not get the best version of Chris. Chris Boucher is like, oh man, it's gonna pay. Chris Boucher is like Anthony Randolph if you had 25,000 VC to spend.
Oh wow.
Like, pains me because I love Anthony Randolph. I still believe that he could do it if they gave him a shot. But like, that's the family that he's in.
You were loyal to the soil. Did you answer?
Boucher or Bamba? God. At least I know Boucher can shoot. I'll go Boucher.
All right, I only have three total questions for you left, and then we're out of here. Unless you have anything else. Impromptu free throws for the dunkers out there. Brandon Clark or Jared Vanderbilt?
This is spoken like someone that just read, that's been reading my tweets the last few days. Like, yeah, I'm going to mess him up with this one. You ain't slick at all. not slick at all. Going to go Clark.
How do we show respect to PJ Tucker and what he's done for Miami this season? There's no award for it. Like, should we just put him on all defensive team? Like, I feel like my whole second team is just going to be Miami Heat.
Like, it could be, and honestly.
It's going to be Miami Heat and Alex Caruso.
I mean, like, just throw Gabe Vincent on the team. That's cool. But no, like, he was, you know, we did the defense episode. Like, he was an honorable mention at the four spot for me. Like, he's been insane.
He's winning games for this team, man.
He is.
Like, I was like, oh, PJ Tucker, it's going to work in Miami. And it's worked like times 10. Quarter threes, crashing the glass, defensive effort.
And there floaters. And floaters. Push shots. They're running post splits through this man. Like, PJ, like, I look at this and it's just like, okay, what was he doing in practice at Houston? In which he was just not allowed to do literally anything except stand in the corner.
Stand in the corner?
No, like, they ain't do, like, dribbling drills before they did scrimmages or anything. Like I'm just confused. Because, like, heading to Miami, like, one of the things I said was, like, hey, they better not ever let him dribble. And then there was, like, a preseason game in which he went coast to coast and I clipped him. I was like, okay, Miami better not ever let him do that again. And again, like, he's knocking down floaters at a high clip. Bam went down and started running their offense through him as a high post hub. And it's just like, wait, he could do this the whole time? It's wild to me. Another reason why I suppose coach of the year. But anyway, continue.
I have two more questions. I lied. Campaso or Eric Bledsoe?
Jesus, this question is for Chandler and Chandler only. oh, goodness. Shout out to my guy. Jesus, Bledsoe?
All right, Cody or Caleb Martin?
That's how we're closing this out, huh? Okay. The answer is yes. I'll go Caleb. That, you know, full disclosure, that might just be because I've seen more of Miami than Charlotte.
How'd they both make a leap in the same year? That's kind of wild.
They're twins.
Ah.
That'll do it. Oh, man, that tracks. I don't have anything else. So if you're good, then we can lead into the weekend. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us and leave a review. Last I checked, we had 296 five-star. We had 296 reviews. Get us 300. Leave us some nice comments. We might read them on the program. Anyway, we are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Bismack Biyombo is really good 2022.